Welcome to the Health Ranger Report on Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And today we're joined by a very special guest, Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of mRNA technology, in an interview that I'm calling Robert Malone Unleashed. Well, at least as unleashed as he can be. He's a pretty reserved, thoughtful person, kind of takes his time, you know, in the sake of accuracy and being thoughtful and so on. But he talked about a lot of things with me in this interview that he has not really talked about before, at least not to this degree, not with this kind of depth. So it's a fascinating conversation about depopulation and FDA criminality and how mRNA works and why it takes so long to clear out of the body, the exploitation of tech that he helped invent now being misused as kind of a weapon against humanity. We've got all those topics to cover, much more with Dr. Robert Malone right here on Brighteon.tv. We'll be right back with that full interview. All right, welcome, folks. Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, the platform where we can speak freely about issues that matter. And of course, one of the issues that matters, I think the biggest issue of our time, is what's going on with COVID and with vaccines and with potentially depopulation or bioweapons or however people want to frame it. And our guest today is the author of a new book called Lies My Government Told Me and the Better Future Coming. You have seen him in interviews and videos everywhere across alternative media and in some cases regular media. It's Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Malone, thank you for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you on. I've got a ton of questions for you. I appreciate you taking the time for us.
And Mike, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to talk to you and really meet you virtually. I look forward to when we meet in person and to have a chance to talk with your audience. Each podcast format is a different sector of the world, a different audience. And I'm grateful for any opportunity to talk to any of these diverse communities, including your own.
Well, thank you for that. I greatly appreciate it. And of course, our audience knows you as the inventor of mRNA technology. I've got, of course, plenty of questions for you about that and your view of how it's being used today and so on. But I want to ask you just right up front, because there have been some whispers and some hit pieces and things like that across certain sectors of alt media. I just want to ask you this right up front. Are you controlled opposition? Do you work for the CIA? Do you work for the World Economic Forum? Are you a globalist trying to mass murder humanity? I got to ask.
Thanks. I'm so grateful for that. That was sarcasm. Yes, it's okay. The problem with the question, are you controlled opposition, is it's kind of like, have you stopped beating your wife? No matter what you say, it could be twisted to confirm whatever somebody's belief system is. One way to answer it is with humor. And that's, you know, is I do have colleagues that are seasoned in protest movements that advise me from time to time that are, let's say, in our world, in the opposition alternative world. And the first go-to they recommended that I do is to use humor. Think this through with me. Here's a guy who was running a modest consulting business, has done a lot of work in biodefense for decades, has won literally billions and billions of dollars in contracts for government contractors, Beltway bandits, had a secret security clearance with the Department of Defense. It wasn't taken away. It's just not active right now. Absolutely once had a business partner who was a retired CIA agent, Daryl Galloway. Absolutely has published with a CIA officer who was, and arguably still is, one of the U.S. government's top experts in gain-of-function research. That'd be Michael Callahan, the guy that called me from ostensibly Wuhan on January 4th of 2020. So I can understand those that might say, hey, this sounds a little fishy. Why would this guy swim upstream? Why would he go against the current? And any of you who've read the Atlantic Monthly attack piece that came out against me early on in this outbreak will see the work product of a gentleman. If you look at that author and look at where he publishes and what he usually publishes, he usually writes for the Journal of, I think it's the Journal of Higher Education. And he writes pieces on wokeism, defending wokeism. And he did this, you know, just absolute hit piece on me in Atlantic Monthly, right after I co-published with Peter Navarro in the Washington Times, basically supporting the Great Barrington Declaration position and saying that these jabs should not be used widely and they should be reserved for the people that needed them the most. At the time, we didn't have the data suggesting that they shouldn't be used on anybody. And right after that, this author from the Atlantic Monthly calls me up. He'd been doing a long backgrounder piece. They always do this trick I've learned over time with like the New York Times and others and Washington Post. These journalists do this trick where they try to seduce you. They say, oh, we're going to tell you your story. Everybody's been so mean to you. No one tells your real story. We want to tell your story.
Right,
and
they
seduce you. And by the way, if you ever get that line, my advice, hang up the damn phone. Just don't take it. I've been burned 3 times now, and I'm not going to be burned a fourth, and I hope you all never get burned. But my point with this gentleman, this young gentleman, of defender of wokeism for the Atlantic Monthly, he calls me up. It turns out after he's already corresponded with Tony Fauci and NIAID about me, and all he can ask is, why would you possibly speak out like this? You must have some conflict of interest. And he just goes on and on and around about this. And I tell him, because it's the right thing to do, because what's being done here is wrong. And he cannot accept that answer. But that's the answer I give you. If I am controlled opposition, show me the evidence, because I have been clear, consistent, for years now. I've destroyed my consulting business. I no longer have any contacts with these people in the government that I cultivated work relations with for years and years, decades. And instead, I have consistently blown the whistle, spoken out about the problems, tried to help people to understand what was going on, tried to help them to understand what the technology was. This book, I mean, read this book, okay? This book, if you can read this book and conclude that I'm a government agent, I want something, whatever you're smoking. Look at the track record of what I've said. Look at what the press has done and the government has done to try to destroy me. Look at all the time I've spent. I testified in Louisiana 3 times for Jeff Landry to try to help the mama bears there overthrow those vaccine mandates on the children. I testified with Ryan Cole in favor of ivermectin in Tennessee, and now ivermectin is available over the counter in part because of what we did.
Yes. Okay,
look at the track record. Look at what I've said. Look at what I've done. I've thrown my whole life into this, and I absolutely didn't need to do it. By the way, I'm not rich. The last point I want to make is some people have accused that I have made millions and millions off of this vaccine discovery, this technology that I did when I was 28 years old. Okay. And the truth is that I signed an employment agreement that made it so that every single thing I came up with and did belonged to the company Vicel. My total compensation for all this has been one U.S. Susan B. Anthony dollar. That's it.
Wow.
Full stop. Okay. I don't work for Moderna. I don't work for Pfizer. I got no money off the patents. I got screwed. I ended up with a nervous breakdown and a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. Does that sound to you like some guy that has made billions and billions or millions and millions as some broadcasters, I say that with tongue in cheek, have asserted, there's no there. As you read in the book, I've been a farmer and a carpenter. I've been a farmer my whole life. I raise horses. I produce them. I run it like a business. It's not a luxury farm. I drive a tractor. Before I came on the trip I'm on right now, I stacked 8 tons of hay the morning before I jumped on the plane. So, you know, if I'm the bad guy, we're all in trouble.
We have more in common than I thought. You know, I tend to buy old John Deere tractors built in the 70s, and I take care of donkeys, and I've got goats, and I've got chickens.
I'm sorry to tell you, this is not very American. I am all Kubota. The fact I get in my damn tractor and I turn the key and it starts, and I get in my RTV and I turn the key and it starts. And I got to tell you a story. We breed Australian shepherds too. And one of the old male dogs sat on the gas pedal, and the Kubota was in gear, our RTV with the cab and the air conditioning and all that good stuff. My wife was feeding out hay. The damn dog sat on the gas pedal, drove it over a cliff into the creek. I had to pull it out with a great big come along winch. You know, it's been down in the water. We had to save the dogs. The water was flooding the cab. I pulled it out with the damn come along, and I get it up on the shore, on the banks, turn on that key, and the thing fires up, and we're still using it. So, you know, I use Kubota, but I,
well,
Deere's,
I actually,
Deere's cool too.
No, I the Kubota brand is really very reliable, and I agree they do start better, and frankly the parts are more available. Anyway, we don't get into farmland, but I feel for you, because there are days that I have a rake and I'm cleaning out the chicken house, you know, and I'm taking the chicken poop and I'm putting it around the fig trees, and I'm just doing farmer stuff, and that's the sanity that I find in the world.
Absolutely.
Because everything else is completely insane.
Yeah. So we lost our shirts in the real estate collapse. I lost about $600,000 in equity that I'd built up by rebuilding a house in Rockville. And then building a farm up in Frederick, Maryland. And then we had to move down to Northern Georgia to run an influenza contract. And we bought in 07, and we just got our clocks clean. And we had to do a deed in lieu of foreclosure and walk away. And my wife and I drove up the coast. We were breeding Percheron draft horses at the time. I used to put up hay with Percheron. I am legitimately a teamster. I once took second place in driving a team of homebreds at the World Percheron Congress. So I can drive and rake and
that
bale and all that kind of stuff. But so we took a drive up the coast from Georgia, and we just really liked Virginia. And so we settled there, and we leased 2 different farms where we were trying to get out of the handcuffs that the banks put on you when you do a deed in lieu of foreclosure. And then my wife found these 30 acres that was unimproved hayland, no fences, no power, no septic, no water, up against the Shenandoah National Park. And in a little county that literally about 2 miles as the crow flies is the oldest Lutheran church in North America. And it has the same population that it had in World War II. So we found this little slice of paradise in this little valley with a creek, big, it's a pretty good creek running around it, and bought it from the owner at 5% for, you know, direct payment to the owner, no banks involved, and we homesteaded it. We bought an office trailer, very illegal. They could have fined us like $100 a day, and we used a porta potty. And we would scoot up to the local health club in Culpeper, just north, about half an hour, whenever, you know, every third or fourth day to get a shower. And we built this place, put in the well, put in the power, rebuilt the buildings. We now have 2 homes on it, put in all the fences, put up a barn, and it's a sweet little farm now. And we lease the adjacent place, so we're managing about 50 acres. And we produce a really high quality horse, very desirable, called a Percheron. I'm sorry, called a Lusitano, that are mostly from Portugal, most of our stock.
And are these work horses then?
No, no.
Lusitanos, show horses or what?
Yeah, Lusitanos are, it's the Portuguese horse that has been bred for years for the bullfight and for military riding.
Uh-huh.
But it is just taken off all over the world for dressage. It is a working breed. And it's not as fancy a mover as the big German and Dutch sport horses like the Hanoverians, Trikaners, and those Dutch Hornbloods for dressage. But it's intelligent and it's rideable. And people just love it. And frankly, we sell, so we've been breeding horses now for a long time. And you know, you learn a lot of things over time. And one of the things we've learned is you got to breed the absolute best you possibly can. So that's what we do. And, we pretty much only sell to one kind of person, which is wealthy, upper middle class, middle-aged women who want a companion animal, and they want an Olympic caliber horse, but not one that's going to kill them. And so that's what we produce. Mm-hmm. We produce a hand-raised product. You know, it's a 5-year crop cycle. It takes a long time, between the breed and I don't know how many horses I've been up to my elbows in, doing artificial insemination. We collect our stallions. You know, we do the whole thing. So it's a business, and we absolutely homesteaded that place. And we talk about it in the first couple chapters of the book, you know, kind of like we were living this quiet life, winding down to retirement, when the shit hit the fan, basically.
Right. This is a side of you that people don't get to see, that you could have just stayed there at the farm and done nothing and kept your mouth shut.
And if it's up to me, I'm only doing this because the mission called. I'm doing it because, not because I want to be famous. I'm certainly not going to get rich at it. You know, I travel all the time. It's brutal. I hardly get to pet the dogs, it seems like. We're traveling so much.
Right, That is a brutal schedule. But in observing what you've been through for the last 2+ years, I was always astonished at first, okay, you came out, you were blowing the whistle, you got all these hit pieces from the mainstream media. You were testifying on behalf of Health Freedom and you were speaking different places. And then at some point, I don't know exactly when, certain sectors of alt media started to, you know, to attack you. And I remember thinking, like, usually people get only attack from one or the other side, right? Like usually those of us in the Health Freedom Movement, we're always getting hit pieces from the mainstream media, and all our Wikipedia pages are full of lies and everything. That's almost a resume now for anybody in alt media. Like, I don't trust anybody unless they've had a hit piece written about them. You know what I mean? But then
Wikipedia page. They have just eviscerated me on Wikipedia. And by the way, it's Philip Cross that's doing a lot of that. And the evidence is that Philip Cross is British intelligence.
Wow. So, well, how come he didn't talk to your so-called CIA handlers and just work it out?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is a fabrication. And I don't know why, you know, there's, And I wrote, it so deeply upset me, the things that were being said. They were so ugly.
Yeah.
That, you know, two different people have accused me of being a mass murderer. And I'm just trying to help people.
And that's why,
by the way, let's put a pin in this one.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got 9 issued US patents, which, by the way, Moderna did not cite. That's failure to cite. and potentially their patents can be invalidated because of that.
Oh, that's interesting.
The patents expired because Merck basically pocket vetoed them because they were trying to develop the DNA vaccine aspect of the technology. And I have had absolutely no contact or involvement with CureVac, BioNTech, Moderna, or Pfizer. And in fact, UPenn, I did have over a decade ago, Katie Carrico called me and asked for advice, and I tried to help mentor her. She'd never done any of this stuff well over a decade after I'd done what I'd done. We abandoned this technology in my research lab back at Davis because it was so inflammatory. It was so toxic. And we went on to develop other technology, including the use of pulsed electrical fields, and helped found a company called Inovio, which is still running in San Diego, which has, I think, it's better tech in some ways, but neither one of them are appropriate for this kind of global deployment stuff. And in the case of this tech, again, put a pin in it. I wasn't involved in these vaccines. I was critical about these vaccines from the get-go. I got hammered for saying that the spike protein was a toxin on the Dark Horse podcast with Brett Weinstein and Steve Kirsch, and then saying it again on Epoch Times, and saying it again and talking about the risks of the vaccine driving escape mutations with Peter Navarro in the Washington Times. Look at what I've said all the way through. I got called a liar by the Washington Post for standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial saying that in the case of Omicron, it is explicitly clear these vaccines are not preventing infection, replication, or spread of the virus. And they called me a liar. I was right about that, too.
Yeah, you were.
The biggest thing I didn't get right, to be honest, was I got hoodwinked by that Chinese propaganda in January 2020, same as the rest of us did.
Yeah.
And I thought was going to be a highly lethal pathogen.
And me too.
When I got infected and just to give a shout out to the Brownstone Institute, they have done a super job of tracking down the details of the events that happened early on. And it sure looks to me like one of the things that we also have gotten wrong is a lot of us thought this is about Tony Fauci, but it's looking more and more like what's really gone on is that this whole thing came through the National Security Council and it flowed down. And the people that have been managing this have been DOD, DARPA, and Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. And as far as I'm concerned, the big tragedy of the Senate not going flipping is that we're not going to see an impeachment of Mayorkas because he is really a bad guy that's behind all of this this attacking basically patriots.
And much, much more than that. I mean, all right. Well, Dr. Malone, have a wonderful evening. Thank you for joining us. Don't disconnect quite yet. A few seconds after we wrap this up. Yeah. Okay. And
thanks
folks,
a lot, Mike.
Thank you, Dr. Malone. And folks, feel free to repost this interview on other channels and other platforms. And of course, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, but I support all the platforms of free speech that are out there. So post it everywhere, get the truth out, and support Dr. Malone's book, Lies My Government Told Me. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and soon maybe a Dr. Malone narrated audio version. Thank you for listening. God bless you all. Take care.